Bienvenue and welcome to Akeem's Dream Show. My name is Akeem the Dream, also known as Brown Sugar Supreme, also known as The Dark Knight Batman. I'm Batman. This show is a variety show because I had a lot of ideas growing up and wrote them down, and my curiosity is insatiable. And you'll notice that I have a lot of random ideas and subjects, but I think that's what makes it fun. Variety is the spice of life, and I like to keep it spicy, and you will find that out very quickly. Remember, folks, never grow old with no stories to tell. And it's finally time to spice things up. Let's go.
Check this out.
Wagwan, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Akeem's Dream Show. And today, upon your head top, we're going to be talking about some rutty things, man. You know, straight from the rivers of Babylon, tune your head top, man. You know, top of the mind, tip of the tongue and whatnot, right? I got some pumpkin pie staring at me right now in my Babylon sheets and silk line, you know, right now. So anyways, let me get straight to it. Harvest Moon, what are we talking about? This is the time of year when chickens come home to roost. Right? Relationships end, they begin. Farmers collect the harvest. Bonuses are paid out. People go back to school. A lot of things happening at once, right? So this is the time of year where I start to get really reflective. It's my favorite time of year for a lot of reasons. Like I already mentioned, pumpkin pie. You got horror movies coming down the pike. But this is a variety show today. I wanted to give you guys a few podcast items at the end, as far as like just shows that I were going to do single episodes for, but I'm just going to do it in a variety show format like I've done in the past. But just wanted to give you a general update about what's going on in my life lately, because I haven't really talked about what's been going on in my life lately. Just been kind of going from show to show with like different topics throughout the course of the summer. Like my summer was just wild. Like I had a lot of stuff happening. You know, I went to Shambhala, went camping a bunch, went to San Francisco. And in between that, it was a fringe here. It was a fashion show here. And it just felt like fast paced. Didn't get a chance just to sit down and think about who I'm at. Who am I becoming? What am I doing? Who's important to me? What's important to me? What are my long term plans? All these kinds of things, right? That you don't necessarily think about too often, but are important. And I've had a chance in the last week to really look at the chessboard and think about what do I want to do and why. Today I had a really cool experience where I was at the mall just going to get my buddy a book, and as I'm walking through, I saw this old timer sitting on the bench, and I got myself a new Philadelphia Eagles hat, and he goes, "Oh, are they playing today? Good job." And I said, "Yeah, they are." And he said, "The Blue Jays?" And this guy's probably in his 80s. And I go, "No, man." I keep walking by, but I keep like, you know when you're talking to someone and the conversation's still going as you're walking away. And you just keep, it turns into like yelling because, you know, you're not going to stop and talk. Maybe you have to go, you know, drop a deuce or something. So you just got to keep it moving. But anyways, this guy was cool. And I thought to myself, if I see him on my walk, when I'm walking back to my car after I pick up the book, I'll shoot the shit with him. I get the book, come back, and he's there. And I just stop and start talking to him. And it was really cool. This guy named Wayne, 83 years old, starts telling me about his life. I start asking him questions. How's it going? Where are you from? And I love talking to old people. I'm not going to lie. They're so interesting because they, you know, people, I'm probably sound really trite and like a curmudgeon slash a boomer when I say this kind of stuff, but they're way more interesting to talk to than people my age on average. Like the average person in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, they're going to have so much wisdom, but people walk by them. And it's kind of ironic because you're looking for the answers to life. These people have lived life. They've made it this far and they're happy and they got a big smile on their face. This guy, Wayne, grinning ear to ear, starts telling me about how he was a cow farmer, dairy farmer in Saskatchewan for the first 23 years of his life. And then he got into construction. He tried different industries out and he was successful. And then he failed at some things and just had a look at genuine joy in his life. He said he worked full time till he was 77 years old and he just retired 6 years ago. I asked him about like, hey, like, if you were my age, 32 years old, what would you tell yourself? if you were talking to me right now as if I was you, 32 years old, which by the way, that would have been, he was born in 1930, if he's 83, which means that he was my age in 1962, which is crazy. That's when my dad was born. The year my dad was born is how old this guy would have been when he was my age. And he goes, whatever you're going through in life, put your maximum effort in and do it with a big smile on your face. Something along those lines. I feel like he said more, but we kind of chimed in and out. And then as soon as that, I think he said as soon as he started saying stuff like that, then his daughters and grandkids showed up and he was embraced by his family, which kind of was more valuable than anything he had to say, which was build a family, build a legacy. This guy Wayne's going to be survived by his family, his granddaughters, his grandsons. Maybe he's got a lot more kids, I don't know, but they all loved him. Like, hey, grandpa, how are you? And I was just like, man, that's so dope, man. When you're in your 70s and 80s, you're at the mall with your family, he's having a good day. Anyways, I just love that. And yeah, pumpkin pie's back. Costco called me. They said, Akeem, we got your pies for you, sir. So a few years ago, I started going to Costco's and I go pick up two or three pies, right? Like, this is my favorite dessert. It's not even dessert. Like, I could eat pumpkin pie on a desert island if I was trapped. That or peanut butter, because I feel like I would just get a maximum amount of calories and just be able to live forever. And I'm going to live forever regardless, but that's not the point. The pumpkin pie is delicious. I highly encourage you to get some pumpkin pie, because yes, there's some brown sugar in there for you, baby. And it's going to come in nice and sweet and hot, Melody, right off the tongue, into your heart. And which gets down into your heart there, boy. When that pie touches your soul, you're going to realize that there is hope for humanity, after all. So these ladies from Costco call me like, Akeem, the pie is ready. So I get on my horse and gallop over to Sherrod Park, pick up about two or three of those bad boys, get a little whipped cream, go there and put there in the trunk. And whew, the first pie is always the best. The first piece, I probably caught like a sixth or an eighth of the pie and just give her, right? Oh, nirvana, sublime. Jeez, I feel like whenever I record a podcast, there's always like somebody dying because there's like a million fire trucks and ambulances driving by. Not at any other part of the day, but as soon as I start recording a podcast, it turns into Gotham City here. It's a good thing I'm Batman. It's going to be the long Halloween this year. This is the year, too, with Harvest. Back to the theme of Harvest Moon. I feel myself wanting to reconnect with people from the past who've had a huge instrumental role to play in who I am as a man. And I called my auntie up. That was really important to me when I was growing up, as far as just taking care of me and taking me to the pool and stuff. Called her, had a nice conversation with her. I'm lining up a meeting with one of my first basketball coaches I ever had. I met with my old football coach last week, which was cool. And we sat down and he knew me when I was 13, 14 years old. And he recruited me when I was playing basketball at a local gym in Sherrod Park, just like one of those rec leagues. And it's interesting because that one decision he had of recruiting me really changed the trajectory of my life and my brother's life forever, right? Because we played football. It wasn't obvious that we played football if he never met our family. So I just enjoyed chopping it up with him. And it made me think, like, if there's anyone from your past that you haven't talked to in a while that was maybe a mentor or someone who was really important, it could be a football coach, could be a community leader, could be an old teacher. It's extremely good for your soul, I think, to spark it up with those people and just maybe grab Denny's. Like, that's what I did with my old football coach. I know I normally never eat breakfast, but I made the exception for Coach S. You know, I played for the Rams, and our motto was respect, attitude, motivation for success. And football is temporary, but life is being a good citizen is forever. So I had a fantastic time with Coach and chomping it up. And one of the things he used to say was, when you're on the football field, this is something I learned when I was 14, is like, the hardest thing about football was learning the playbook, because there was like literally over 100 plays. And that was the hardest part for me. So what I ended up having to do one day was make this crack block, but I blocked the wrong guy and our running back got tackled. And this was in practice. He goes, Brown, get over here. And it's because when I did the block, because I didn't know what I was doing, I slowed up and I didn't go as hard as I could. And, he goes, Akeem, if you're going to make a mistake, make it going at 100 miles an hour. And he used to call me Brownie. He said, let me see those hands, Brownie. Those hands are got the Midas touch. You know, you're never going to drop a ball. I was the only guy in the field that didn't wear gloves. But anyways, go see people who are important to you from the past. It's really cool. Those guys, you know, they would love to hear from you. And I know as I'm saying that, somebody's coming into your head. I hope you reach out to those folks. Because it's harvest season, right? It's harvest moon. The inspiration for this episode just came from seeing all the fall colors and pumpkin pie and all that stuff. And then also seeing this massive moon. I'm not sure if you guys saw it, but the size of the moon the other week, or I think it was like 3-4 days ago, I looked out and I was just like, man, that is a massive block of cheese up there. Holy smokes, man. Blood orange. In Lord of the Rings, if you remember the Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers and the Fellowship of the Ring, whenever there was a blood orange moon like that, Legolas would go, many bloods have been spilled this day. In Middle Earth, if the moon was bright, that meant that there was a war, which is true, I guess, on Earth. People get murdered every day on this Earth. But this is probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, but I was driving back home from watching football with my buddies, and I start seeing this huge flock of crows, not flock of seagulls, Duran Duran fans, but a flock of crows in Sherer Park. And I just decided to go full on National Geographic and follow these birds because I really respect crows. If you go back to one of my episodes last year, I did an episode called Birds of E-Town. I ended it with how crows and ravens are my favorite because they're the most intelligent and they're kind of thoughtful. They are able to be social. And based on the story, what I ended up able to find out was that following these birds across Sherer Park, there was like this random industrial warehouse area kind of east of Sherer Park. And there was literally thousands of birds just like having a conference, chilling outside on top of buildings, on grass, on parking lots. Like they weren't really doing, they were just literally just all camped out there hanging out. There was no food there. It was very peculiar. And I remember seeing this with Fritz when I was running with him maybe 3 years ago, around September, October, same time. And they used to do this, but further east at a church in Sherer Park, they just all go to the church. And part of me thought it was biblical. Like, oh shit, this is like the beginning of the beginning of the plague or whatever that story is from Genesis, where every day there's like this crazy natural phenomenon that happens. But them going to the church kind of made sense in a spooky way. But them just going to a random industrial park, like in the same kind of area, it's starting to make me think that there's something to this, where maybe they meet every year and they're like, Kate, where are you getting your bread from?
God, where are you getting your bread from, Phil? Hey, Bernie, I'm getting my bread from Banff National Park, and there's some good food over in Airdrie. Actually, there's this really cool guy outside of A&W. He's been giving good fries lately, but you have to be watching out for those other guys. Those teenagers don't like us too much. They confuse us with the shithawks, you know? What are the shithawks? Oh, you know those little white birds? They got national protection somehow from the Queen Elizabeth. They call it the Queen's bird. I don't know why the Queen has that bird as her bird instead of us. We're black and beautiful. They're white and disgusting. They bug our brothers and sisters at the park when they're trying to eat a pizza. Like, do you remember that one guy, Akeem? We like Akeem a lot. Too bad those shithawks won't leave him alone. Anyways, that's all I have to report. Okay, see you next September.
That's what happens every September when they fly into Sherer Park for their conference. And I'm not joking. I wish I could throw a video in there for you guys to understand. But probably 3,000 or 4,000 birds just all flocking. They obviously don't listen to Kodak Black. No flocking. I'm back in French class. And after 3 or 4 weeks of it, I thought I was getting better. But taking through the summer off, it really slowed me down a bit as far as my ability to speak. I'm having problems starting sentences. Speaking French is fun, and the classes are great. I actually enjoy it a lot because in the French classes, it's kind of like a fun atmosphere where people are riffing, making jokes. It's like a different, there's old, there's young, there's male, there's female. It's kind of like a cool interaction environment. And this is one guy, Maxime, who I've known since I started in the classes last October, which marks a year since I started, actually. It's crazy. October 22 is when I started learning French. And I'd say my comprehension right now is at 45-50%, but my speaking is like 5 to 10. Like, I can introduce myself. I can have very, very, very simple conversations. Not even that, like greetings, which is not nothing. But I'd like to be able to speak better. But it was funny because this new French teacher, they fly him in from France, this guy Leandre, he is probably the best French teacher I've had so far. I've had three. He's probably been the best because he's so freaking funny, man. He's just constantly roasting people, constantly riffing, constantly all that kind of stuff, right? And two most common verbs to conjugate in French, or that you really need to know because they're foundational, are être and avoir, which is avoir means to have and être means I am. And it was funny because we were doing some lesson or something and I couldn't conjugate those two words. And he just paused. He's like, this is not good. And he goes, you need to study this and you need to know. So he put me in front of the class, in front of like seven or eight people. Like think of grade three math or grade six math or whatever grade where you're starting to figure out who you are and it's a scary environment. Think of that atmosphere or that feeling of going in front of the class and on the chalkboard being like, hey, what's 17 times six or some shit like that, right? Or who was the first prime minister of Canada? Like that kind of shit where you know you're not, you don't know off the top of your head and you're gonna have to think about it in front of your classmates and people are gonna be telling about the story in the schoolyard and, right? It's very intimidating. But I'm 32 years old and I'm Akeem the Dream Brown Sugar Supreme, so this is not a big deal. I go up there, have the chalk in my hand, and I can only get maybe 10% of it. And I'm not going to lie, I'm embarrassed. Because I actually have a thing in my apartment with them both conjugated on a big sheet of paper. I just haven't looked at it. But now, I can happily say, after a week, the next week I came back and I said, if I get any mistakes on the conjugations of eth and avoir, I will do push-ups. And you could publicly roast me. And he's like, no problem, Akeem, because he knows I'm a big alpha male, like funny guy. So he's constantly thinking, I gotta get on Akeem for, you know, bring him back down to join us on planet Earth. And it was just so funny because I come back the next week and I can say it all now, right? Être is je suis, tu es, il est, nous sommes, vous êtes, vous êtes, and ils sont. And avoir is j'ai, tu es, il est, nous avons, vous avez, and ils ont. But it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to actually spell it out. And this is all in the present tense. So I did it, and I was only able to spell it out like maybe 70-80% right. And he found 15 mistakes. So he's like, 15 push-ups, Akeem, let's go. Allez. And I was going to do it there. And he's like, just do it at home. And I actually did it at home. But anyways, it's a fun class. I love learning new stuff, right, and being in those environments. What else? As far as general life updates. This has been a really tough time of year for me with regards to like just losing stuff. I lost a very close member of my family in August. You know, she lived a good life, so it wasn't like super emotional, but it was definitely hard because my family and the effect it had on my family. And then just recently, like, you know, someone who was in my life that was really, really important and really close just kind of decided to do something that was best for them. And it's not that it is what it is and life goes on, but like obviously, you know, you start to get reflective about those kind of things and you start thinking about, okay, like, you know, how can I improve? What are the lessons that I can take from this and become a better person for it? So it's just been a transitionary period of my life, thinking about harvest and the harvest moon, thinking about seasons of the year. Winter has always been a season of work, putting your head down, work, struggle, living off rations that you've prepared from the harvest. Spring is the season of sowing or planting seeds. Summer is the season of cultivating, so watering the seeds. And then obviously we're in the middle of harvest season right now, which is harvesting the crops. And that's a metaphor for your life, right? In the winter, you're planning, you're working. In the spring, you're planning, you're strategizing. In the summer, you're cultivating and working, and then in the fall, you can reap what you sowed. If you didn't sow anything, and if you didn't work hard in the winter, then you won't have anything to harvest. And in the past, there's been autumns where I didn't harvest anything because I wasn't sowing, right? And I wasn't cultivating. So if you didn't harvest much this year, whatever it might be for you, think about winter, working, planning, strategically thinking about the next year, and really think about what seeds you want to sow, whether it's learning French or fighting or getting a new career or getting new hard skills, building new relationships, those kinds of things. These are all things you can think about for next harvest because there's always a harvest. And with that being said, this is the variety show portion of the episode where I'm going to start talking about some things that I find really interesting or things that have kind of stood out to me in the Keem's Dream Show fashion. And the first one is apparel. Okay, let's talk about men dressing up. Dudes, if you listen to the show and you have a suit and a blazer, I have a challenge for you. I want you, even if it doesn't require you to do it at work or school, to wear a blazer with a collared shirt, jeans, and dress shoes one day this week, the entire day, and just see what happens. I was watching movies from like the 50s and 60s, and one thing I noticed was like, man, every man back then wore suits every day. Like virtually every man, unless you were like a trades guy or a farmer, speaking of the harvest, was wearing a suit every single day. When I used to play football, we used to say, look good, play good, right? Look good, feel good, play good. But for whatever reason, we went from a culture in the West of dressing nice. Women go crazy for a sharp dress. Little ZZ Top for you right there. But yeah, dress sharp dressed men, outside of the women loving it, it used to make men look regal and important and respectful. The amount of guys I was seeing these days wearing like sweatpants and pants hanging off their ass. And you know what's funny? I used to get on my mom about, because back then in the early 2000s, was watching rap videos. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to wear my pants saggy and stuff like that. And sure, there's a phase for that when you're like in your early teens. But when you're in your late 20s, 30s, why not put a suit on? Why not put a collared shirt on? You'd be surprised at how it makes you feel and how people interact with you too. People are going to look at you differently. So I think you should highly, highly, highly consider wearing a suit, putting on something collared, putting on something really fancy. I like to throw on a collared shirt and a blazer 2-3 times a week. The older I get, the more I want to buy more suits. I was in West Ed yesterday walking around and I was like in RW & Co. and I almost bought a new suit for $250 because it was so nice. And that's part of the reason I want to get rich. I think when I get rich, the thing I'm going to spend the most amount of money on is suits. I'm going to buy a lot of suits. There's a video by Steve Harvey where he goes, every man needs a different kind of suit. I'll put it on right here for you.
Every man has to own a black suit. After you get a black suit, there's 5 suits you need to get. Black, navy, gray, brown, tan. You get those 5 suits, you get yourself 2 white shirts, get yourself 2 cream color shirts and 2 powder blue shirts. You can make 75 suits with those combinations, because every last one of those pants go with every last one of those jackets. Every last one of the jackets goes with every last one of the pants.
Next up is, I was going to do a whole episode about my favorite high school teachers, but I'll just kind of highlight one that was really important to me. And the name was, well, I won't say his name, but he was a jolly guy. If anyone out there knows my high school, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about here. But he taught me grade 12 English, 30-1. And in 30-1, you learn about Shakespeare. And we were studying Hamlet. And Hamlet was a depressed young man because, right, his heart was broken for a variety of reasons. He was holding the skull, contemplating death. And we had this really existential talk about the importance of heartbreak. And he said something that I'll never forget. He goes, you guys don't probably don't understand this, but, and you will when you're my age, but I miss being heartbroken. He said that. He said, I miss being heartbroken, guys. I miss that feeling. And by this point, we're all like 17, 18 years old. So maybe we had like one heartbreak or one breakup or something, right? Like high school puppy love, right? And we're like, that, even as like minor as I was, it probably sucked. So why would you say that you miss it? And now I get what he's saying. Heartbreak, it sucks because it's so real. Like you feel it. It's like getting off of heroin. That's what I've heard it being compared to. Like going through the withdrawal is so serious as being compared to heroin rehab, where it's like you need it. Like you need that person, right? But your body and your mind and your soul is so intertwined with this relationship that it's hard to understand your life without it, which is important for your development as a person. Because if you've never experienced heartbreak like that, you really haven't lived. I think that's what he was trying to say in the context of Shakespeare, which is why if you want to live more, maybe you should get your heart broken, which sounds stupid, right? But I think in the aftermath of that, right, time heals all and heals hurt to walk in. There's another dad joke for you. It is really important to have heartbreak once in a while because you'll never know what your heart is supposed to feel like otherwise. Or you won't know if you've ever felt alive if you've never had pain. That contrast is important. I think 50 Cent had a line about it. Sunny days wouldn't feel special if it wasn't for rain. Joy wouldn't feel so good if it wasn't for pain. Death gotta be easy because life is hard. It will leave you physically, mentally, and emotionally scarred. I've also heard this thing with like people who are parents where they're looking at people who are single laughing about their range of emotions. Because when you're a bachelor, your range of emotions go from like a 0 to a 10. When you're in a relationship, they go from a 0 to a 20, or a negative 20 to a negative to a plus 20, right? Like your happiest moments are doubled when you're with a partner, but they're also, like I just talked about with relationships, they're, it's not 0 when something bad happens with them, it's negative 20. But if you throw in kids into the mix, now it's plus infinity and negative infinity. If something amazing happens for your kids, it's like nirvana, it's bliss, right? It's heroin. But if something bad happens to your kids, it's negative infinity, right? People, I think that's one of the things in life people just never get over, is if they lost the kid, right? Or if they're a parent and their kids die in war or something like that happens, because it's like anti-evolution, it's anti-life. The parents are never supposed to succeed or outlast their kin. And I think it's important to think about that, right? With regards to the levels of and the ranges of emotion you're going to experience as a person. So yes, heartbreak, English teacher, there you go. Next one here is pay your taxes. I know it's not April when tax season normally happens, but this concept of paying your taxes is something I'm not going to humble brag here, but I think I'm pretty good at. And what does that mean? So when you pay your taxes, like you take an income from a, you take a salary, take an income from a place, the government automatically is going to take whatever X percent based on what you make. Now compare that revenue to the benefits you get in a relationship, whether it be friendship or otherwise. And in this context, I'm mostly talking about friendships, right? People who are in your life as friends. These people, think of the joy and the pleasure and the happiness they give in your life as the revenue, like from a company. If you don't pay a tax on that, revenue, if you don't pay a tax on that friendship to the government of the relationship, then the IRS or the tax man, maybe not in the first year, but in the second and third year, they're either going to recall the revenue from that friendship or they're going to default you and they're going to garnish your checks. So what I'm trying to say here is, do you give more to relationship than you get from it? Because if you have this, like the easiest way to have a friend is to be a friend, right? People say relationships are 50-50. I'm like, no, they're 100-100. And if you pay your taxes, people, if they're good friends, and this is what makes a really successful relationship over the course of your life, is if they're good friends, they'll reciprocate or they'll want to do it too. If you have both parties paying taxes, the government of that relationship can use those taxes to build bridges. So pay your taxes. For me, I'll drive across town to deliver a book. I'll help somebody move. I have no problems showing up to a little event or to a big event. I have no problem sharing a post on social media of a friend. I have no problem buying dinner. And I don't do these things, this is an important note, I don't do these things with the expectation that something, I'm going to get something back. I do these things because I want to. I do these things unconditionally. When you do contracts and business and stuff, you learn really fast that a lot of contracts have so many conditions and clauses in them because people got screwed in the past. A handshake used to mean, I have no weapons, I will do no harm to you. But now, because of there's bad actors and people doing bad faith deals, people have to protect themselves, and that's where the legal system comes in with contract law and all that kind of stuff. And I think that's bled into how people think about relationships, where it's like, I'm only going to be friends with you if you do this for me. And the moment you start keeping a ledger with somebody where it's like, hey, I've been taking them for dinners, I've been taking them here, I've been doing this and that for them, and they haven't really reciprocated, or they haven't offered to take me for coffee in a while, or I've just noticed it's like every 10 things I do, they do one thing for me. Maybe it's not a number in your head, but as soon as you get that sensation, it's probably because that person's not paying their taxes and your internal government IRS system is starting to give alarm bells. Like, hey, this person hasn't paid their taxes in a while. And I hope, my hope and prayer is that anybody who's in my life doesn't feel that way about me. I want people to think about me, if they're important to me and I'm important to them, in the context of, man, Akeem is such a great friend of me. Akeem does a lot for me. Next up, we have this concept about the Renaissance man. And this just kind of was something that dawned on me when I was listening to a podcast maybe like 3-4 weeks ago. And this guy was talking about how in the 1700s, during the Renaissance, in France and other countries, it was not uncommon for people to have 3 or 4 different careers. And it was almost weirder for someone to have one career and do that for their whole life. It was more common for someone to be a farmer, turned painter, turned shoemaker, turned soldier, turned politician. Like that, for whatever reason, that seems more appealing to me. That seems really, really interesting to me. I feel like that's the way I want to live my life. And I kind of have lived my life that way. There's been a through line of like business development and sales and marketing and all that kind of stuff. Deal making, I would say. You could just categorize it as. But I have done it in different industries. Fortune 500, oil and gas, real estate. And then in between that, I've had like I've had a fragrance business where I made fragrances. Different mini jobs as a tree planter. And I think people are Renaissance men and women up until they're like 22 because you do a different jobs in the summer to pay for school or you do a job during university. And then all of a sudden you get into this career mode. And unless there's upward mobility in that career path, you're just going to be kind of shoehorned into doing the exact same thing. And then there's reports out there saying that like the average person out there feels trapped in their job or feels like they have no way of upward. They feel like they don't feel any job satisfaction. I think the average person. I'm not sure what the stat was, but it was something along the lines of like the average, like over 70% of employees in the United States or Canada, you know, feel upset or trapped or unhappy in their current gigs. And part of me thinks that if they just adopt this Renaissance mentality of, hey, I'm going to develop skills along the way, but I'm going to change careers maybe 2 or 3 times. Like every 4 years, I'm going to try something new. And that's kind of what I'm doing. And I'll tell you what, maybe I'm just a happy guy. Maybe it's just my DNA. Maybe my chemistry is just the way it is. But I feel like that's a funner way to do things. Think about Leonardo da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci, right? This is a guy who was a painter. Benjamin Franklin's a better example. Let's look up all the jobs that Benjamin Franklin had. Here's all the jobs that Benjamin Franklin had. And I don't think it's a coincidence that this is the guy who ended up on the $100 bill. That is the ultimate flex when it comes to currency is 100. 100, right? My dad used to call her brownie. Got a brownie, right? The Canadian $100 bill is a brown bill. So my dad calls it a brownie. But Benjamin Franklin, think about how many jobs this guy had. And Benjamin Franklin, if you didn't know, was one of the founding fathers and one of the most amazing polymaths and minds of the 17th, 18th, and 18th centuries. So here we go. He was a writer, he was an inventor, a diplomat, philosopher, journalist, musician, librarian, editor, statesperson, satirist, publisher, political activist, and printer. That's a lot of careers, and he did all of them well. So I should probably do a whole podcast about Benjamin Franklin, but that just inspires me, right? And this leads me into my next and my final point for the podcast for Harvest Moon is instead of the S&P 500, which is what is the most common stock market or market to invest into for the average investor out there, which is like the top 500 companies in the world, people invest into that because it's pretty safe, like you're getting a 7% return. But me being the wordsmith I am, instead of it being the S&P 500, why isn't it be the S&ME 500? And what I mean by that is, how much are you investing into yourself? When's the last time you took a weekend course? When's the last time you took a course period? When's the last time you learned something new? All this money you're spending in the stock market or buying on private companies, why don't you buy stuff for yourself, for your mind? Buy a retreat, buy a course, do a pottery class. Like I try to preach on this show a lot to have new experiences and learn new things, which is why I tried to go hunting last year. I'm learning French now. I learned machine learning and coding last year. This all ties into that whole Renaissance man idea, right? Which is Benjamin Franklin didn't just become all those things because he stopped learning. Like you should be a learning machine. And if you do that, the same way that you'll get 7% in the stock market, you'll get 7% on your skills every year. Think about that. All the skills you have right now, Think about getting 7% return on your skills every single year. Because what will make you a better investor, or what will make you more money in the S&P 500, the actual market, if you do it in stock investments and stuff, is by skyrocketing your revenue, making way more money in your job or your business or whatever, your side hustle. If you can do that, and the only way to do that, by the way, make more money in your actual daily income, is to get more skills. And the only way you get more skills is to learn more shit. You learn more shit by investing money into yourself. So the S&P 500 was just an idea I had about, like, every year, instead of buying a stock, you should buy a course. You know, obviously you can buy stocks, or, you know, put money into the S&P 500, whatever, if it's like $100 a month, whatever. But let's say you put $1,200 into the S&P 500 every year, like $100 off every check every month. If you put that into a course every year, let's say you had a new course every year for the next 10 years, the amount of knowledge that you'd get off of that just from skills alone, I think you'd be able to expect a 7% return. And the law of 72 says that every 7 years, on a 7 or 8% return, your money doubles. So if you can do this, apply this for your life, in theory, if you were to learn something new every year, every 7 years, you'd be able to double your revenue, double your income. So if you're making 60 grand now, in 7 years, if you keep putting $1,200 a year into education, you can expect to make 120 in 7 years. Maybe even more than that, probably way more than that. But a lot of people, I think they stop reading after university. They stop learning. They stop becoming curious, which is why I do this show, because my curiosity is insatiable. Guys, thanks for tuning in for another episode of Akeem's Dream Show. Until next time, I'll see you at the Pumpkin Pie lineup.
Peace.